recognize, or you might wind up like me.
He smiled weakly at her. How can we release her then? Said Sanchia. What can I do?
You? He said. You'll do nothing. This is my task, my burden, and mine alone.
What do you mean? I thought the key was eroding, falling apart.
Oh, it is, he said. But the more the walls fall away, the more control I have. And I might not have strength enough to open Valeria's box, but I do have strength enough to restore the key to its original state. And that can open the box.
She considered this. But if the key is restored to the original state, then would we be able to talk? To speak? To be friends? He smiled at her sadly.
No.
She sat back, shocked. But that's not fair.
No, it isn't.
I don't want you to scrumming die, Clef. And I know it's not really death, but it's damned well close enough.
Well, you don't really have a choice, I'm afraid. This is my choice. But it was good to speak to you, and I had to warn you of what awaits before we part ways.
So this is goodbye?
Yes, he said softly. It is.
Something loud clanked above her, and the machine began to whirl.
Remember, move thoughtfully, give freedom to others, and you'll rarely do wrong, Sanchia. I've learned that now. I wish I'd known it in life.
Something rattled and clattered, and a huge wheel began to move above.
Goodbye, Sanchia, he whispered.
Then there was the whir of machinery, the hum of gears, and things went white. Sanchia opened her eyes. She was still in the mountain, still standing on that tiny shred of floor with Estelle and Tribuno, and the box was still before her, glowing red hot. Yet Clef was moving. She felt him turn again in her hand, like some part of the lock that had previously resisted her finally gave way. There was a deep, echoing clank from somewhere within the box. It sounded like it was echoing within an impossibly vast space, one much, much larger than the box itself.
What did you do? Screamed Estelle. What did you do?
Then the lid of the box clunked and swung back. A blinding bright light shone from its interior, as if the sun itself were inside the stone box. And there was a tremendous screeching sound, like enormous metal wheels breaking across vast tracks in the sky. Sanchia cried out and covered her eyes with one arm, her other hand on Clef, and tried to look away. Yet the light seemed to be everywhere, bathing everything, burning into her. And somewhere, she heard a sound like thousands of clocks chiming in a faraway room. Then the blaze died. The screeching and chiming stopped, and suddenly the box was just a box, cracked and old and empty. Sanchia blinked and looked around. She was still where she was, but things looked different. The colors were muted and strange, as if a bit of light had leached out of everything. Then she heard the clicking, soft and steady, like the rivets and brackets of a massive clock. And she saw her, standing at the edge of the broken bit of floor, staring out at the cityscape of Tavan, a woman made of gold. But this was not the small, slender thing Sanchia had glimpsed in Tomas's jail cell. This figure was huge, 8 feet tall, 9 feet, it was strangely hard to tell. Her shoulders were broad, her arms thick, and she was not like a sculpture now, not a human form wrought of gold. Instead, she appeared to be wearing gold plate armor, and through the cracks of the armor there seemed to be something. Something clicking, something whirring and writhing. A voice echoed in Sanchia's ears, at once close and distant.
I know these skies, said Valeria's voice softly. The huge golden woman pointed. Once there were stars there, 4 of them. I pulled them down and hurled them upon the heads of my foes, even as they assailed upon my bulk. To no avail. At least, not yet.
She shifted on her feet.
Later they would find a way to kill the very stars, deprive me of my favorite weapons. But once, there were stars there. Sanchia looked around, or at least tried to, but suddenly she couldn't move. It was like she'd been frozen in place. She looked out of the corner of her eye and could see Estelle and Tribuno there. Yet they seemed frozen too. It was as if Valeria's arrival had frozen the whole of the world. Slowly, the hulking figure turned. The clicking increased, like the chatter of insects on a hot afternoon. Valeria's face, Sanchia saw, was now a mask, a blank, calm golden mask with no apertures for eyes or a mouth. Her hair was like a carving, gold ringlets spilling down her vast shoulders. "And you, little bird," she said. She walked closer to the frozen Sanchia, and with each step she seemed larger and larger, until she was a vast statue, staring down with golden eyes. "My God," thought Sanchia, terrified. "What have I set loose?"
"You," said Valeria. "You freed me."
She knelt, a long, slow process, and stared into Sanchia's face with her blank, masked eyes.
"I owe you a debt, true?"
Sanchia could not move, but she glanced in the direction of Estelle and Tribuno. Valeria turned to look.
"Ah, yes, the elevation. You desire I intervene? That I intended to do regardless. Another maker, not optimal."
There was a shiver in the air, and suddenly Valeria was gone. Then Sanchia spied her out of the corner of her eye, bending low over Tribuno and Estelle and doing, well, something to the golden dagger in Estelle's hand. The clicking increased, growing so loud, so harsh, like a swarm of wary, terrified cicadas. There was a pulse in the wind, like someone had slammed a large door into a small room.
"There," said Valeria's voice. "A simple fix."
There was another shiver, and suddenly a shadow fell across her, and Sanchia knew Valeria was now behind her, and from the size of the shadow, she had somehow grown so tall.
"A debt is still owed to you," said Valeria's voice. "One day we shall decide how it will be repaid in full. For now, tread carefully, little bird. An old monster has been hiding in your city, and tonight you have made an enemy of him. He will not forgive you for this. So as I said, tread carefully."
There was a tremble in the air. The clicking rose to a shriek and went silent. The shadow vanished, and then Sanchia collapsed onto the ground, groaning. She lay there for a moment. Her body ached in countless places. Then she shook herself and looked around. Valeria was gone. The box stood open, yet it seemed to hold nothing anymore. Did that really happen? Or did I imagine it? Then Sanchia saw Estelle and Tribuno. Tribuno was clearly dead. Estelle was still gripping the dagger.
"What? What happened?" Estelle said faintly. "Why isn't it working anymore?"
Sanchia looked at the dagger. It wasn't gold anymore. Now it seemed to be common iron, and it bore no sigils at all.
"Why aren't I immortal?" said Estelle. Why aren't I a Hierophant?"
There was a soft pattering as Estelle's blood fell to the floor. Then she lost her strength and sank down the side of the bed, pawing uselessly at its legs. Sanchia walked over and looked down on her.
"It's not fair,"
whispered Estelle. She was as pale as white sands.
I was going to live forever. I was going to do such amazing things."
She blinked and swallowed.
"I did everything right. I did everything right."
"No, you didn't," said Sanchia. "Look at yourself. How could you think such a thing?" Estelle's eyes searched the skies, panicked.
"This wasn't how it was supposed to go. This wasn't how it was supposed to go at all."
Then she was still. Sanchia looked at her for a moment longer. Then she turned to Gregor. He lay there, trapped in his lorica, staring at her with blank, sad eyes and blood pooling at his side. She walked to him and said, "Come on, let's get you out of that thing." She cut away the ties and saw Estelle had seriously injured his arm. She made a crude wrapping to tie it off and helped him sit up. "There, there we go. Can you talk?" He didn't move or speak. "We need to get the hell out of here, Gregor. Now, okay?" She glanced around and grabbed the Imperiat. Then she paused and looked at the box. Clef was still sticking out of the lock. She slowly walked over to him, hesitated, and reached out and plucked him out. "Clef?" she asked. Nothing, just silence as she'd expected. The key just sat there in her hand. I'll find a way to fix you," she said, sniffing and rubbing her eyes. "I promise, I..." Beleaguered, she looked out on the city. She could see a lot of the Candiano Campo from there, and it looked like Dandolo troops were pouring through the gates. She walked back over to Gregor. "Come on, get up. It's time for us to go."
"Did it work?" said Berenice. "Is it over?"
Orso peered through the spyglass at the broken dome of the mountain.
"I can't see shit. How am I supposed to know?"
Sir, you will want to look behind us."
Orso lowered the spyglass and looked back into the commons. Armored soldiers were pouring through the streets, bearing swords and espringles. They were all wearing yellow and white, Dandolo colors.
"Should we feel good about this?" asked Berenice.
Orso looked at their faces. They looked grim and hard, the expressions of men who have been given permission to do ghastly things.
"No," he said. "No, we should not. You get going, Berenice."
"What?"
she said, startled.
"Sneak off somewhere, down that road or that one."
He pointed.
"I'll hold them up. I think they're here for me, anyways. Get back to the crypt if you can. I'll try and find you."
"But sir..."
"Now," he snapped.
She backed away, watching him for a moment, then turned and ran down a side road into the commons. Orso took a breath, puffed himself up, and marched toward the soldiers.
"Evening, boys. How are you doing tonight? I am Orso Ignacio, and I..."
"Orso Ignacio!"
shouted one of the soldiers.
"Hippodis of Dandolo Chartered, you are hereby ordered to raise your hands and place your body and self upon the ground."
"Yep," said Orso. "Yep, got it."
He lay down on the ground and sighed.
"God, what a night."
Part 4. Foundry Side. Any given innovation that empowers the individual will inevitably come to empower the powerful much, much more. Tribuno Candiano, Letter to the Company, Candiano Chief Officers Assembly. Chapter 42.
"The nature of the case is quite clear," said Ophelia Dandolo, her harsh, cold voice echoing in the council chambers. Her fellow committee members nodded, their faces reserved yet severe. "Despite all that we have heard about Occidental nonsense, about rituals and ancient mysteries and murder and treachery, despite all of this unprovable fancy, at the end of the day, we have a man. A man who fabricated an incredibly dangerous, illegal device which he then activated at his own test lexicon. A man who then used that device to invade and make war upon the Candiano Campo. And finally, a man who then helped a second conspirator, still at large, to get to the famous mountain of the Candianos, and then, using that same device, managed to almost completely destroy it."
Ophelia peered over the edge of the judicial lectern.
People died. Many people. This was an act of war, and thus it is the decision of the Judiciary Committee of the Tavani Council of Merchant Houses to respond to it as warfare. Orso sat in the tall, narrow cage hanging from the ceiling of the Judiciary Chambers, his long legs swinging through the gaps at the bottom, his chin in his hand. He yawned loudly.
As the chair of the Judiciary Committee, I now ask, does the defendant have anything to add to their final defense? Asked Ophelia Dandolo.
Orso raised his hand.
Ophelia looked around.
Anything at all?
Hey, said Orso.
He waved his hand.
No, she sniffed, surprised, and picked up the ceramic gavel to end the trial.
Orso sprang to his feet. What about all the witnesses? The people who saw what happened in the mountain? What about all the people who nearly died of mysterious attacks on the goddamn Candiano Campo?
Ophelia raised the gavel, her eyes cold. Her fellow committee members stared into the lecterns before them.
The committee decides what is pertinent to each case, and which witnesses shall give evidence, she said. It has made clear its decisions regarding each of those issues of which you speak. Such matters are closed and are beyond the realm of defense. She banged the gavel on the lectern. The trial is concluded. I will now confer with the committee regarding your sentencing.
She leaned back in the chair and whispered with the other men at the lectern. All of them seemed to be nodding seriously.
Ophelia stood up at the lectern. The Judiciary Committee, she pronounced, sentences you to...
Let me guess, said Orso sourly. Harboring?
To death by harboring, she said, irritated. Any final comments from the defendant?
Orso raised his hand. Ophelia exhaled softly through her nostrils.
Yes.
So, just to make sure here, said Orso, the Judiciary Committee must have unanimous consent from all active Tavani merchant houses when sentencing someone to death for inter-house conflicts, right?
Ophelia's brow creased ever so slightly.
Yes.
Well then you can't sentence me to death.
The committee members exchanged an uncomfortable glance.
And why not? Demanded Ophelia.
Because you need to have representatives from all the active chartered merchant houses, said Orso. And you don't.
What? Yes, we do, she said. Without Candiano, that leaves Dandolo, Morsini, and Michiel. It's perfectly clear.
Is it? Said Orso. When's the last time you checked the charters?
She froze. She looked back at her fellow committee members, who just shrugged.
Why?
She asked.
Why ask me? Check the charters.
Ophelia summoned over an aide, gave them an order, and they all sat back to wait.
This, said Ophelia, is most assuredly an attempt to simply delay the court.
Minutes later, the aide came back, pale and quaking. He walked up to the lectern and handed her a small scroll. She unfurled it, read it, and then her mouth fell open.
What? What in all the hell is Foundryside Limited?
She thundered.
I don't know, said Orso innocently. What does it say it is?
You!
She stared at Orso, her face turning the color of a ripe peach.
You went and founded your own damned merchant house?
He shrugged and grinned.
It's easier to do than you think. No one ever tries, you see, because they know they'll just get crushed.
But you must have at least 10 employees to start a merchant house, she snapped.
He nodded.
I have that.
You do?
Yes.
But you must also have operational property.
Have that, too, he said, Real estate and foundry side is damn cheap.
She stood up. Or so, Ignacio, you...
Uh-uh, he said chidingly.
He raised a finger.
I think you're supposed to address me as founder now, right?
An icy silence filled the chambers. Orso leaned forward, grinning through the bars.
So, since Foundryside Limited is now a fully operational merchant house, and since we don't have any representation on the Judiciary Committee, seems like it'd be a violation of the laws to convict me, and especially to execute me.
Ophelia swallowed, her hands and fists at her side. She looked back at her committee members, who looked uncertain and alarmed. What a brilliant tactic, she said acidly.
Thank you, said Orso.
Do you know why it's never been tried before, Founder Ignacio?
No.
Because people are right. Newly founded merchant houses do get crushed by the established houses. And I suspect that a house that has just used these laws to escape a conviction of murder and sabotage will receive so, so, so much more hostility from the established houses that, why, I can't imagine such a house would survive a month, if a week. I know I certainly wouldn't go to work for one. She glared at him, her eyes glittering nastily. And there is no statute of limitations on your crimes. Once your house goes under, you'll be right back in that cage with nothing to protect you from the loop. Orso nodded.
I'd be afraid of that, Founder Dandolo, if it were not for one thing.
And what, pray tell, is that?
He leaned forward in his cage, grinning evilly. We took out the oldest merchant house in Tavan in one night, he said. If I were a merchant house, well, personally, I would not go screwing about with Foundryside Limited.
Sanchia slowly climbed the wooden stairs, wondering exactly what in the hell she was walking into. It had been a chaotic 2 days, sneaking Gregor from place to place, living in ditches like fugitives, trying like mad to reach her old contacts. The crypt had proven to be totally empty, and almost all of her contacts were gone. But those that remained had all said the same thing. If you want to find the scrappers, go to Foundryside, to the Diestro Rookery, only it's not called that anymore. Well then, she'd asked, what the hell is it called? Foundryside Limited, they'd all said. Don't you know? It's the new merchant house. Which was unheard of. And yet, it had been true. She'd walked through the door of the Diestro to find not just Claudia and Giovanni hard at work, but dozens of craftsmen and laborers who were renovating the entire building into something that resembled, well, a merchant house. A small one and a dirty one. But still, a merchant house. Neither Claudia nor Giovanni had answered any of her questions. They'd just pointed at the stairs and said, "He wants to talk to you first, before any of us do, anyways." And so here she was, walking up the stairs, totally unsure about what awaited her. The stairs ended in a large room that was nearly empty, except for a desk in the back. Orso Ignacio stood behind it, reviewing some schematics for what looked like a lexicon. He looked up at her as she approached.
Ah, finally, he said.
He grinned.
Sanchia, my dear girl, take a seat.
He noticed there wasn't a chair.
Or just stand comfortably, I guess.
Orso, she said. Orso, what the hell is going on? What is this place? Where have you been?
Well, the last question's easy, he said blithely. I just got out of a trial where everyone wanted to kill me.
He sat.
As for the other questions, that's a bit more complicated.
But, Orso, did you start your own damned merchant house?
I did,
he said, nodding. She stared at him. Really?
Really,
And you bought this building?
Yup. Well, Claudia bought it for me with my money, but yes. You need property and a good number of employees to be a chartered merchant house, and Claudia gave me both. Nice girl. Thanks for introducing us, by the way.
You made a deal with the scrappers? All of them? And they get, what, to be employed at a somewhat real merchant house?
Not just employment, said Orso. Ownership. They get to be founders. I supply the starting capital, they supply the labor and raw resources, and we all share a piece of the profits. It's not as mad as it sounds.
He thought about that.
Well, it is pretty mad, but I thought it was a smart play. Company Candiano's been on the decline for ages, and Estelle and Tomas's mad shit was the last straw for lots of employees and clients. Clients who still have needs, of course. But now that people are fleeing Company Candiano like mad, again, what merchant house do you think the clients are going to?
The one spearheaded by Tribuno Candiano's former lieutenant, said Sanchia. He grinned wickedly.
Exactly. I know more about Candiano processes than anyone. I've already got 3 supply deals in the pipeline, and we also came up with some cunning, monetizable shit during all of our desperate plotting. So long as we stay functioning and solvent, we all duck the loop. Though we're going to get bombarded by the other houses, and soon.
He took a breath.
So, that brings us to what I wanted to discuss with you. Because though I'd like to pretend I can do this all myself, I know I can't.
She stared at him. Wait, Orso, are you offering me a job?
No, he said. I'm not. I'm saying that if you were to ask for a position here at the Good and Noble Merchant House of Foundryside Limited, I'd give it to you. In fact, at this stage of our development, it'd essentially make you a founder, Sanchia.
Me? A founder?
In the most technical sense of the word, yes, said Orso. Someone who has started something, though no one will have any idea how it'll finish. It could all go very poorly. So, if you want to be free of Tavan, to get out of here and go live your own life, then do that instead. You've earned it. I want you to feel entirely free to have it, if you want. Because I'm scrumming charitable as hell, you see.
He looked at her. She looked back. There's more to it than just me, said Sanchia.
Who else could there be?
Asked Orso. Gregor, said Sanchia. He's alive, and I have him. Orso looked dumbfounded.
He's what? Gregor Dandolo is alive?
Yeah, and he's... Well, it looks like he's like me. A scribed human. He's been scribed all along. I just don't know by who. She filled him in on the rest. He listened, shocked.
Someone scribed Gregor Dandolo. Boring, dull, stodgy Dandolo. To be a goddamn killing machine?
He asked. Basically... He fought it, though. He could have taken my head off, but he broke himself somehow. I've been trying to take care of him. I've got him hidden at the crypt now, recovering. But he's in a strange way or so. He's lost everything, and he needs our help. After all he's done, he deserves it. Orso sat back, dazed.
Well, shit, I'd be happy to take him in. And if we can get him back on his feet... He'd make an excellent chief of security. If he can recover, that is.
He looked at her.
Now, would you be willing to take a position with us?
There's one more thing. He sighed.
Of course there is.
She took Clef out and slid him across the desk to Orso. He gaped at the key.
Really?
Don't be happy. This is a problem, not a gift. He doesn't work anymore or talk. We need to fix him. We've got to fix him. since he's the only one who can tell us what really happened and what's really going on. Orso scratched his head.
Usually when someone haggles over the conditions of one's employment, he said, it's about pay or lodgings, not insane mystical conundrums.
You want me? Said Sanchia. You have to take all my baggage with me. There's a lot more than there used to be.
So, is that a yes?
Is Berenice here? She asked.
She is. She's overseeing the construction work.
She thought about it. What did she say?
She said she'd wait to hear what you said.
Sanchia smiled. Of course she did. Chapter 43 Ophelia Dandolo walked across the Dandolo Campo to her front gate, across her courtyards, and into her mansion. She paced down the front hallway, then through a set of doors, then downstairs to the basement level, and then to the back to an undistinguished-looking cabinet door. She opened the door. Within was a small, blank room. Ophelia shut her eyes, pressed her hand against the back wall, and waited. The wall melted away as if it were made of smoke. Behind it was a tiny, cramped spiral staircase, leading down. Ophelia lit a scribed light and walked down the stairs. It took a long time, for there were many, many steps. Finally, she came to a small wooden door. She waited for a moment, took a breath, and opened the door. Beyond was a huge stone cellar, with a vaulted ceiling and many, many columns. There was no light within, but she did not need one. And a light would not work here anyway, for the room was full of moths. Ophelia carefully walked through the whispering, fluttering storm of moths. She came to the small stone seat in the middle of the room. She sat and waited. She waited for a very long time. Finally, she saw him, glimpsed him, just a shred of his form, lost amidst the swirl of wings. She swallowed and took a breath. I assume, she said softly, that you are aware of how things have progressed, my prophet.
He did not move or speak. He just stood there, a figure concealed by the flurry.
I don't know what happened with my son, she said. We spent so much time preparing Gregor, and he's done so much for us in the wars, arranging your designs. But now to have him fail.
Still, he did not speak.
The construct is free, said Ophelia. Is it possible to withstand this blow? It seems like this is the worst of all possibilities.
There was a long silence. Then finally he spoke. And as always, he spoke in her mind, loudly and clearly.
No.
No?
No. The war is not lost before it ever began. Rather, it is just beginning. She will begin once more the process she started so long ago, and we must work quickly to stop her.
So, what shall we do, my prophet?
There was a long silence.
I believe, he said, it is time to stop hiding.
This is Tara Sands. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Foundry Side by Robert Jackson Bennett. This program was directed by Bruce Mann. Executive producer, Orlie Moskowitz. Text copyright 2018 by Robert Jackson Bennett. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.